I'm Steve Dawson, and this is This Comedian's Life, a podcast where we talk to a variety of funny people about their lives in comedy. I talk to comedian, host, and podcaster Paul Gilmartin. Most people know Paul as the host of Dinner and a Movie on TBS, which ran for 16 years. I talk to Paul about one of the show's most memorable episodes.
Talk about the one, just one experience from the show, if you don't mind. People may not know what a penny farthing is.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know until I heard an interview with you where you described what that was.
Yes. Penny farthing is those old tiny bicycle where the front tire is gigantic and the little tire, the back tire is just a tiny little tire. The guys with the bowler hats and the handlebar mustaches.
Sure.
It's those things that they ride, and we used one. We were showing the movie with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour, a movie called Somewhere in Time, mm-hmm. which is kind of a really, it's almost like softcore emotional porn for mostly geared towards women, where it's a love story and it's set in a romantic place and it takes place at the turn of the century, and it's all about the costumes and the, you know, the love that can never be. And so we had Jane Seymour on, and I thought it would be funny if the premise for me was that I thought everything was in the 1800s that we were doing. And so everything seemed like a miraculous invention to me. And then at the end of the show, I rode off on a penny farthing. And so it was probably my favorite show that we did, because it just, when we would satirize something, you ride a fine line between being funny and being disrespectful to the movie that you're showing.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like we wrote a fine line on that one, because there's times we showed movies where I just really wanted to crap on the movie because it so bad it made me angry that I had to watch it. Yeah.
How was writing the penny farthing? It seems dangerous from pictures.
Hard. Hard. You have to have somebody help you get up on it and get off on it. It's the worst designed bicycle you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
But I suppose it had to start there.
Yeah. Did it?
I can't imagine anything was worse than that.
Paul has an alter ego. He sometimes goes on stage or on podcasts as Representative Richard Martin, a staunch conservative who represents Ohio's 19th district. The character is very convincing. I heard Richard on Adam Carolla's podcast several years ago and was completely fooled.
Because I've known who you are for years and years, but it didn't say Paul Gilmartin. And I'm not kidding, Paul, for like the first 30 minutes of you chatting, I thought, this congressman has a great sense of humor, even though I don't agree with anything he's saying.
Well, thank you. I take that as the ultimate compliment, if people are fooled at first by him. It means I'm doing something right. I know these guys. I know, I golf with them. I went to college with them. A lot of them aren't bad guys. I just happen to differ greatly in my opinion of their views on the world, and it's fun to make fun of them because it helps me not go insane.
If you don't mind, Paul, can you share some of Representative Richard Martin's views?
Yeah. He believes that Planned Parenthood is worse than ISIS because ISIS doesn't try to sell the heads.
Very bold position.
He believes that there's two things gals can never keep low enough: their weight and their voices.
Sure, it's like it's an old-fashioned view, but
it's very old-fashioned.
Talk about bomber jackets seems to be a staple of your campaign.
He believes that the way you dress reflects how you feel about the world, and when you look at somebody, you can tell whether or not they're a patriot. And then he goes through top to bottom describing, he says, look at my hair. It's the way you wear your hair is how you feel about society. And I like mine evenly divided. Renters to one side, homeowners to the other. Red ties. Red's a good, bold color. A lot of good things are red. blood, war, meat, tenement fires. He's proud of his pleated khakis because pleated pants subliminally tell the world, I'm such a go-getter, I've added things to iron. He loves his tasseled loafers. He believes that wearing a loafer without a tassel is like wearing a bomber jacket without Hard Rock Cafe on the back of it.
Oh, it's that important. Wow.
Well, when people see you coming down the street with tasseled loafers, they think that fella's so successful, his shoes are having a parade.
That's true. It really is sending a message. And speaking of which, he has three children, is that correct?
He does, Ronald, Wilson, and Reagan.
Right.
And the joke is, I have two beautiful children, three total, but two are beautiful. One which is character.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. Did that come about from, like, these golf outings, or how did that...
No, it came about, it was 2004, and I very much disagreed with a lot of stuff that George Bush was doing, and I was on stage complaining about it one night, and it was comedian after comedian complaining about him, and I thought, I sound like everybody else. How can I get my... comedy crossing a different way, and I thought, oh my God, I'll dress up like the guys that like him.
Ugh.
And do a satire of it because I know exactly the way a lot of them dress. And so I went and I got the clothes, and I wasn't really sure how it was going to go over. And I went up, it was an open mic night at a bar, and nobody was listening to the comedians, and people were playing darts. And I was like, I almost bailed because I was like, this is going to be a disaster. And I went up there, and all of a sudden, after like my first or second joke, you could hear a pin drop. And suddenly people realized, because this was before Stephen Colbert had started doing his thing, so that people weren't used to seeing somebody satirizing arch-conservative people. And all of a sudden, there was like this cathartic energy in the room, and I realized that I had tapped into something, and then I got invited to go to do the Aspen Comedy Festival, and it just started taking off. And I do it as much for me as for entertainment for other people, because it helps me deal with my anger at things that I can't control.
Paul hosts his own podcast called The Mental Illness Happy Hour, a weekly podcast that addresses addiction, trauma, and mental illness in a very unique way.
When did you start the podcast, Paul, and why did you start the podcast?
I started it in March of 2011 because I felt like a discussion needed to be had around mental and emotional struggles in a way that wasn't condescending and academic or preachy and new agey. Because I felt like there was nothing real and raw out there. And I knew the danger of living with untreated mental illness. I've lived with depression and anxiety for a long time. And managing it can be really difficult. And I just kind of threw it out there, thinking maybe somebody will listen to it. And just kind of took off, and I would have never imagined that would then become my full-time gig, because it overlapped with doing Dinner and a Movie for about 6 months. Dinner and Movie also happened to go off the air in late 2011. So it was good timing, and I think it really helped me not become a basket case when the show went off the air, because I had something to do.
Yeah,
something to do that I loved. And my wife was working at the time, so money wasn't a big problem. All told, the transition went as smoothly as I could have hoped for. And now I love doing it. I feel like it's the perfect medium for me to express myself, because I'm able to talk about what's important to me. And it's an important topic, and one that I think isn't... If it is being discussed, I don't think it's being discussed in a way that can really connect a lot of people. I think too much of it has been discussing it in an academic way. And what really, really moves people and gets them to remember something is hearing somebody's story, especially if there's emotion behind it. And I love hearing a good story. I watch probably 7 documentaries a week. I just can't get enough of hearing people's stories.
And you do get intimate with the people about their experiences. Do you have guests that are sometimes scared to come on your podcast and open up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it won't air their episode. I warn everybody before I record that I can't promise their episode is going to air. I record way more than I use. And one of the things I'm proud of is that my guests come from all walks of life. It could be somebody who's a celebrity like, you know, Adam Carolla, Maria Bamford, Marc Maron, or could be a listener. Probably a quarter of my guests are listeners, and it really opens up the scope of the topics that you can talk about. But the most important thing I look for in a guest is vulnerability and a story that's compelling, mm-hmm, or important.
And it's not just issues of depression and mental illness. Sometimes it's the way in which these people were raised, if they're raised in a, I don't know, like you've had people that are raised within cults before.
People raised in cults, a woman who was raised in the Warsaw Ghetto as a Jew during,
wow,
World War II, a woman who was had to flee underground from the Ayatollah in Iran, just people with dissociative identity disorder, you know, which is multiple personalities. Yeah, you name it, on and on. And then somebody who just has nothing that they can point to in their life for why they feel a sadness and an emptiness and just a blah. And those are really important stories, too, because there's so many people. And often those people weren't raised in abusive environments, but they were raised in an environment where there was no discussion about feelings or emotions, or their emotions were slighted or invalidated. Or maybe the parents were kind of checked out. Maybe they were workaholics, and you know, love was maybe shown with money instead of that parent being attentive or present. So they're all, to me, important stories. And a lot of stuff about sexual abuse, mm-hmm, as a lot of people who have mental illness had some type of trauma in childhood, and there's a lot of people who are sex abuse survivors that have never talked about it, or just keep it hidden away as their own personal shame, which is one of the worst things you can do for healing, is to not talk about it.
And of course, when we, you know, list all the things that people have suffered from to come on your show, it sounds terribly heavy, and at moments the show can get heavy. Mm-hmm. But I think what makes you so special and so successful is that there is glimmers of light found in the course of the show, and there's almost always some humor, certainly never making light of whatever the affliction is. But I think that makes it easier for the guests to talk to you about.
Thanks, and that's the greatest compliment I could get, because that's what I set out to do. And it's a fine line, riding that line between being able to laugh at really dark stuff and being disrespectful to the issue or the person. But my guests, for the most part, really throw their trust in when they sit down, and that makes it much easier. And I think part of the reason is I've shared so many of my warts on the show. If they've listened to an episode or two, they know I have no business judging anybody else. I'm as crazy as the next person. But the humor is a very important part of it. But it I like to think that the vulnerability and the honesty is the sundae, and the humor is kind of the cherry on the top of it.
Thanks to Paul Gilmartin for joining me this week. You can find his podcast at mentalpod.com, or keep up with Representative Richard Martin at askarepublican.com. I'm Steve Dawson for This Comedian's Life.